Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The New Urban Crisis is a nonfiction book by urban studies scholar Richard Florida that examines why many of the world's most dynamic cities have also become places of widening, inequality, escalating housing costs, and sharper social division, building on the ideas associated with his earlier work on the creative class. Florida argues that the same concentration of talent, capital, and innovation that makes cities economically powerful can also produce exclusionary outcomes. The book is organized around a policy-minded analysis of urban change, especially in the United States, and it focuses on how growth has become concentrated in a small group of superstar cities while many neighborhoods, suburbs, and smaller metros are left behind. Rather than treating urban prosperity as an unqualified good, Florida frames it as a contradictory process that creates both opportunity and hardship. The book is aimed at readers who want to understand contemporary urban inequality and the policy choices shaping it. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, superstar cities create growth by concentrating talent, but that same concentration drives exclusion. Florida's central argument is that modern urban success is not evenly spread across a metropolitan region or across the country. A relatively small group of superstar cities, such as New York, San Francisco, and a few other major hubs, attract highly educated workers, venture capital, technology firms, cultural institutions, and premium amenities. This clustering boosts innovation and productivity, but it also intensifies competition for land, pushes up prices, and makes access to central locations more expensive. The result is that the benefits of growth are captured disproportionately by people and firms already positioned to gain from it. Florida uses this pattern to challenge the common assumption that urban revival automatically improves life for everyone. His explanation is not that cities are failing in a simple sense, but that their success has become structurally uneven. The city becomes more prosperous while becoming less accessible, which is why prosperity and exclusion appear together rather than as opposites. Secondly, housing affordability is treated as a structural consequence of urban clustering, not just a market shortage. One of the book's most important contributions is its treatment of housing as a core mechanism of the urban crisis. Florida does not present high housing costs as a side issue. He links them directly to the way talent and investment cluster in limited urban space. When demand for central neighborhoods rises faster than supply, land values increase, rents climb, and lower and middle-income residents are gradually priced out. This process affects renters most sharply, but it also reshapes ownership patterns, neighborhood composition, and access to opportunity. The book shows that housing unaffordability is inseparable from the broader urban economy because where people can live determines where they can work, study, and reach public services. Florida's discussion also implies that housing shortages are not solved by growth alone. Without deliberate policy, growth deepens scarcity for ordinary households. In this sense, housing is the clearest example of the book's larger thesis. Economic dynamism can produce social displacement unless governments actively shape how urban land and development are. Thirdly, segregation and the bigger sort divide cities into elite enclaves and areas of concentrated disadvantage. Florida argues that the new urban crisis is not only about inequality in income, but also about the spatial organization of inequality. He describes growing economic and racial segregation within metropolitan areas, where affluent residents cluster in highly advantaged districts while poorer households are concentrated in neighborhoods with fewer resources. The book extends this pattern to the suburbs as well, showing that disadvantage has moved outward rather than disappearing. The idea of the bigger sort captures how households increasingly sort themselves into places defined by class, race, and opportunity, creating a patchwork metropolis made up of privileged enclaves and marginalized zones. This matters because segregation shapes everyday access to schools, transportation, safety, and social networks. Florida's point is that urban inequality becomes self-reinforcing when it is built into geography. People do not merely experience inequality as a statistic. They live it through distance, isolation, and unequal public infrastructure. The book therefore treats segregation as a consequence of market forces and policy choices working together, not as an accidental byproduct of city life. Fourthly, middle-class decline in cities and suburbs reveals a patchwork metropolis under strain. A distinctive feature of the book is its focus on the weakening of the middle class as a stabilizing force in metropolitan life. Florida argues that middle-class neighborhoods are disappearing or fragmenting, not only in central cities but across suburbs as well. This does not mean the middle class has vanished, but that it is increasingly squeezed between rising costs in high-opportunity areas and stagnation in places with fewer prospects. The patchwork metropolis describes a region broken into highly unequal pieces, where zones of affluence sit beside areas facing poverty, insecurity, and weaker public services. Florida's analysis is important because it shifts attention away from a simple city versus suburb story. The urban crisis is regional, and suburban decline or distress is part of the same pattern that reshapes downtowns. In policy terms, this means that transportation, schools, infrastructure, and housing cannot be treated separately. The book suggests that a healthy metropolis depends on a broad middle class that can access urban opportunity, and that without this balance, cities risk becoming both more prosperous and more divided. Lastly, Urbanism for All proposes local policy action as the practical response to an uneven metropolitan economy. The book does not stop at diagnosis. Florida argues that because national politics often cannot produce a coherent urban agenda, cities and metropolitan coalitions must take the lead. His policy framework, often summarized as Urbanism for All, emphasizes more affordable rental housing, infrastructure investment, and governance structures that help growth benefit a wider population. He also suggests that clustering should be made to work for inclusion rather than only for elite advantage, which means shaping development so that access to jobs, transit, and services is not restricted to high-income residents. This is one of the book's defining features. It combines critical analysis with a reformist policy orientation. Florida is not calling for an end to urban growth, but for institutional choices that redistribute its gains more fairly. The book is therefore especially useful for policymakers, planners, and city leaders who need a framework for thinking beyond market outcomes alone. Its value lies in showing that the urban crisis is not inevitable. It is produced by concrete decisions that can be changed. In conclusion, The New Urban Crisis is best suited for readers interested in urban policy, housing, economic geography, planning, sociology, and contemporary inequality. It offers a clear explanation of why the same cities that symbolize innovation and opportunity can also intensify segregation, displacement, and affordability pressures. For policymakers and civic leaders, it provides a vocabulary for thinking about urban growth as something that must be governed, not simply celebrated. For general readers, it is valuable because it translates complex metropolitan trends into a coherent argument about how cities actually work. Compared with many books on urban decline, it is distinctive for linking prosperity and inequality as two sides of the same process rather than as separate problems. Compared with purely theoretical urban studies, it is more accessible and policy-oriented, with a strong emphasis on actionable local responses. Its main contribution is that it reframes the modern city as a place whose success depends on whether growth can be made broadly shareable. That makes it both a diagnosis of current urban dysfunction and a guide to more inclusive metropolitan policy. If you would like to support Richard Florida, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.